Hello and welcome to Mikey Pod on the Bayou. I don't know why I always want a hello at the beginning of this, but that's what I do. I've learned so much this week, and I'm still a little overwhelmed. I got to give a shout out to Madge Weinstein over at East Radio. She has helped me out so much, like, beyond. I keep waiting to get an email back saying, figure it out yourself, because I keep sending these little dumb emails asking for help with little piddly crap. So thank you, Madge. You can see Madge in USA Today, I believe it was. I'll put a link in the show notes. What else? I'm trying to get through this quick, because today's interview is long. Well, it's not too bad, but it's cool, because I let Roberto, like, choose some songs to play throughout the show. So that's going to be kind of neat. I had 11 subscribers a couple days ago. Nothing happened, and now I have 9. Is it because I didn't put another show out? Is it because I screwed up my feed? I think I've got it fixed. Who knows? But let me know who you are if you are subscribing, or if you used to subscribe and you didn't, because when you've got 11 subscribers, losing 3 is kind of a lot. So whatever I did, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. The email address. Now I have a Gmail address. I don't know why I felt like I needed to track one down, but everyone else has one. So it's mikeypod@gmail.com. Email me there with whoever you are. If you're listening, let me know, please. It'd be nice to know if anyone's listening. What else? I'm looking at my little list here. Oh, Cute Potter. Everyone check it out. It's a website for queer podcasters. I've got that scoop going a lot today. So that's that. Let's see, I told you about my Gmail address. I started a blog, which is going to host some... this is very complicated. Right now, you can access Mikey Pod on the Bayou at www.mikeypodonthebayou.blogspot.com. Today, and probably for another day or two, you can download the new His Name is Alive EP. Excuse me. The Summerbird EP from www.hisnameisalive.com, and that's 4 songs, and they rock. I sort of lose track of them somehow, and I'll look more on the website, and you can too. But you can download 4 free songs there. Their new album is out too, but it's $10, and I ain't got no money. There'll be a ton of links in today's show, which you can see at the blogspot. And I'm going to put up a couple of Roberto's paintings and that sort of thing, but you'll hear about all that during the interview. I had a great time doing the interview last night. I'd like to thank Roberto and also his partner, Ben, who turned over the place to us last night, from what I can gather. So I appreciate that. And enjoy the interview. Thanks. All right, I'm here at Little Robbie Studios with Roberto Cervantes. And this is take 2 of our interview. We started doing an interview at IHOP, which I mentioned in the last show, and it was long.
It was really bad.
It wasn't bad. It was long. So we have like a little outline today, and we've just had a big conversation about music, which we tend to do. So let's start out by just give me some
background information. Yeah. Let's see. I came to Houston because I went to Rice University and I did architecture there. And I left architecture because I didn't want to be in an office. I didn't want to be in a firm for a long time. We did a little preceptorship, and I saw what was waiting for me, and I decided, nope. I knew that there were too many things I wanted to do. I had a hand in everything. I wanted to do music. I wanted to do painting. I wanted to do furniture design. I wanted to do everything. And that can be a problem a lot of times. In fact, when you want to do everything, you end up doing nothing. But at least... And I knew that in my 20s, I always had this idea of what your 20s are supposed to be about. And that was about not being in an office. That meant I was building a shop. I was just dabbling in everything. And so I'm glad I made that choice. And because architecture, I always felt something you can always do when you can't do anything else. When you can sit in a chair all day long and do architecture in your 50s. But you can't play guitar, learn drums, do all those kind of things when you're... Most people never do that after a certain time. So that's my background in terms of the last 10 years of what I've been doing, in a sense. And a lot of it has just been making a lot of mistakes, learning. A lot of it is learning about clients, funding, meeting people who are interested in your ideas and want to put money into it, and how you deal with that, and how, you know, I grew up with a dad who was very tight with money, and I sometimes this whole idea of, like, artists and patrons is kind of very far removed from kind of what I grew up with. I grew up with this idea is like, you buy something and you get a good value for it. But art and all that is very hard to place in that kind of world.
How to put a value on
art. Yeah, how do you value art, and how do you, why would you, I mean, a lot of times, let's face it, you know, grew up in a real middle class family where art was really kind of a print you'd buy at Michael's and that's it. Not something you would actually, not something that an artist made. And that, I have to be fair, because my grandfather was an artist and I grew up with his drawings up on the wall, and my aunt is an artist too. So that's when I meant the comment about buying prints at Michael's, is like, that was my suburban environment. But at the same time, it was a mixture of that reality and the possibility that I had relatives, you know, an aunt and a grandfather who were artists. So it was this sort of realistic, it wasn't like no one in my family had ever done anything like that.
Yeah.
So it was good. I was actually, and my parents always encouraged me to do as I wanted to. And anything else about background?
I don't know. Tell us what you're doing now. Like, I guess the interesting thing to me is that you found a way to do something that's somewhat artistic and also make a living at it.
Yes.
There's a way to find what...
The bulk of my... Actually, I've been doing so many things now. Let's see. Interiors and furnishings. Basically, I've been hired by people to sort of convert spaces, mostly either... Well, some of them have been new and some of them have been conversions. And whether that's doing... I do a lot of wall paintings. I do a lot of built-in furniture like banquettes. Whether this is... I've done restaurants and hair salons. And I'm about to do a bookstore. And a lot of it is just... make changes, make things habitable, make things attractive, make things fresh and new, and you know, just make things attractive. Give people a lot of, you know, if you're starting a business and you want to attract people and you want to make people happy and catch their eye, and also add a level of sophistication. All my clients have wanted a level, even if it's, I don't want to use the word kitschy, but like, let's say you can use bright colors, you can use almost children colors, but still be sophisticated and still make, sort of pleases everybody. You know, it's like, you know, it's a level of, and I think it's just about, well, I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I mean? It's just like, it can, like for instance, the Barnaby stuff is almost, it's lots of pinks and reds, and it's not necessarily a color, there's nothing, you know, there's no trendy color. You know, it's just, it's all about just having fun with it and executing it well.
Barnaby's is, by the way, a restaurant in Houston that you've done.
That's right. The original Barnaby's on, well, okay, the original Barnaby's on Fairview had, you know, it's been around for a long time and it's had its ups and downs. And Jeff Gale, the owner, wanted to redo it, and so I did all new wall murals and just changed a lot of it in the inside. And then Baby Barnaby's next door was done, and that was really fun. And all those images can be seen on my website at littlerobbie.com or at robertocervantes.com. And then also Jeff asked me to do 3 brown bag delis, which have been open, I think all have been open in the last 18 months. He's had a very fast growing mini French, it's not a franchise yet, but who knows? And then also, I did like a wallpaper thing at West Gray, and he's talking about doing a fire hydrant fountain, which is kind of crazy.
Oh wow!
Like, is it all for people who don't know this? But Barnaby's is a dog theme. It's about Jeff had a dog that died when he was 13 years old, and he's always had this reoccurring. He just uses the dog as this. Cheap dog. Sounds kind of creepy, but it's not.
It's real cute.
It's real cute, and people love it. Yeah, it's the whole dog thing.
The thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about that whole idea of the, I keep forgetting the word to use, the sort of, I'm thinking whimsical,
Yeah, yeah. And like, Jeff uses that word a lot.
And sophisticated, but really at Salon Angel, did I say that right? Alan's
place? Azure,
that's
Salon.
It. Oh, he used to be at that other place.
Yeah.
That, the way that place is designed, and then it's really like kind of sleek and sort of, I don't know.
It falls into that, I don't even want to say, I love Apple designs, and I love everything like frosted white, everything, the way the iPod aesthetic. It's just very streamlined, modern. And that's what I love, and it's, there's got elements of that, but it has also nature motifs like the twig with leaves and things like that.
But then in that middle of the salon,
there's that
mural
big pink
with
thing.
Like pink and like baby blue, right?
Baby blues, chocolates, whites, creams,
and it fits. But you would think like, what is he doing? But it's all like works together really perfectly, I think.
Yeah, because it's mostly white, grays, very super cool colors, and then one huge. But pink is real popular, real hot
I need to write things down so I remember to link things too. Okay, it's time to start talking about music.
Okay.
I don't want to make it too rigid, but now we change our topic.
We have to.
Well, then when we were talking before we started recording and we get into these conversations about different music and stuff, so I got the idea to take songs, to let Roberto choose some songs for the show today to make
yes.
kind of, he's the DJ, so...
Let's see. We'll start off with Anthony and the Johnsons. Got into them because my boyfriend, when he was at UT, he had one of his like architecture buddies said, "Oh, there's this guy you need to listen to." And it was a funny story because Ben called me and says, "Robert, go to this website." And he said, "Go to AnthonyandtheJohnsons.com." And you know, like, you're on the phone, you're like, "What?" Anthony and the, like, and when he said the, I miss it. So it took 15 minutes for me to type in. He said, no, T-H-E-J. And it's like, and I finally got there. And after all of that, it's like, okay. And then he said, listen to it. And you know, when someone tells you to listen to something, you're supposed to get a reaction. You're like, it's nice. But anyway, that was my initial thing. And and you go to the website. I think it's changed since it's been, because he released an album on, I think, Regis Records, and that was sort of a sub, like a, almost a homemade label type of situation. And I think they only have, like, it's a label that only sells his music and maybe someone else. So, and now he has a second album, which is on more of a major label. You know, now you can get that on iTunes.
Yeah.
Or his first album wasn't available on iTunes or anything like that. I recommend the first, and I definitely recommend the second. I don't know which order you should get them in. And I recommend anything you can get it. Like, every EP, everything, because everything is very good.
That cracks me up. I recommend all of it.
Honestly.
Yeah. I got, my friend gave me a copy of that by mistake. Actually, he had intended to give me a copy of something else, my friend Seth. And a lot of times, when people give me music to listen to, I have to really, like, work at being open-minded, because I like to think of myself as... I'm the one that thinks and, like, discovers new great music. So I had put this thing in. I was on my way to teach a piano lesson at 7 a.m., and it was, like, the coolest experience for some reason. The first song is it, I hope There's Someone, is that what it's called? The first song on the newest album?
Yeah. If that's,
and
if that's the
I was
first
listening
song.
To, like, what is this?
His
I don't know what it is, but
really
I loved it.
Beautiful.
And just that kind of, like, lo-fi almost quality, but that is so expressive. So anyway, let's talk about the song we're going to play.
So we're going to play this song called The Lake. It's not on either the first or the second album. It was released first as a live, it was on an EP called I Fell in Love with a Dead Boy, which is one of my favorite songs. And it's on an EP that it's the first version is live, and then it was re-released as a studio version on a single called, I'm trying to find it. Oh, it's the Lake EP, which I got at iTunes, or you can buy on Amazon.
Okay.
Anyway, so it's The Lake, and on top of all this, when you go listen to the song, and it's a basically, he took a lyric from Edgar Allan Poe, wrote a poem called The Lake. And he took the lyrics, and I went to the original poem, and he's finagled some words and changed things a bit. But he took the poem and set it to music, which is a lot of the young songwriters do that. It's like, take poetry and put it to music is a good, good exercise.
Yeah.
But I can't believe, I mean, his if I had just read the poem, I would have been kind of uninspired, honestly. I hate to say it. Maybe I'm just not a big poetry reader or enthusiast, but Antony just adds so much to me. I mean, that's the problem. Maybe music is my sort of... I love lyrics, but I love music as a great vehicle to bring to life lyrics, to make the emphasis and the pausing and the introspective qualities of listening to music and lyrics. You know, it's the melody that and all that kind of stuff that's real beautiful.
Sweet.
So enjoy.
Okay, here's The Lake by Antony and the Johnsons.
Spirit would wait terror of the land. Spring from the dark in my eye, so lovely was the loneliness. In youth spring you was my lord.
Okay, that was Anthony and the Johnsons with The Lake. Did you want to say anything else about the... Oh, yeah. Talk about the animation.
Oh, the okay. When you go to the Anthony website, that's what I was leading to. I always have these crazy tangents. Okay. Anyway, when you go to it, they have a link to worldofadam.com, and he's an artist who created two mini flash videos, in a sense, illustrations or pictorial illustrations that go along with the song. And one is for The Lake and one is for The Mysteries, a song called Mysteries of Love, which, of course, is a cover of the Angelo Baldamenti, David Lynch song that they co-wrote for Twin Peaks.
Julie Cruz? Julie Cruz sang
it first.
Okay.
Sweet. And then, there you go. I love Anthony and all that. And one of the reasons why I think, I always wonder, you know, what drives me and what makes me listen to stuff that, you know, I do like. And a lot of it is the uniqueness of voice. And, other artists I really like, you know, in fact, it's funny. Would you say that Anthony reminds you of Nina Simone? Because he's already been... I think it's a little far-fetched. I can't... Maybe it's just, like, the fullness and the vibrato and this richness that not other singers have.
Well, when I first... I wouldn't have thought of that on my own, but once I heard him compared to Nina Simone, I started thinking that...
Okay.
I could see why, but I still don't really... It's like the Tori Amos-Kate Bush comparison. I don't really see that so much.
I see that because of the fact that they both have this, like, flight of fancy and they have this whole fantasy world.
But...
And they're both going to be silly. But I would say more... And they both have extremely erotic qualities in their voices, but again...
Kate is Kate.
No, I know. That's how I feel about Nina Simone. I'm a huge, huge Nina Simone fan, and I love, Yoko Ono. He's one of my favorite. And we're leading up to that.
I wanted to bring her up anyway, because I'm a total Yoko Ono fan, too, and it's all thanks to Roberto Cervantes.
Yeah. And I got into Yoko because I was at Rice and there was this guy who was a big fan, and he was like, he's the kind of guy that you could talk about music with till 8 in the morning, and it was that kind of thing where, like, you start someone on something and they just get so incredibly enthusiastic. And I said something about, because I was a big John Lennon, first, when you're like 13 years old, you become a Beatles fan really easily. And then into that, you go into, you make a choice whether you're...
That's so awesome.
No, either you make a choice whether you're a Paul McCartney fan or a John Lennon fan. And, you know, if you're kind of a big cheese ball, you go Paul McCartney, who is great, too, on his own. There's a lot of great things. But if you're, you know, if you're a young teenager looking for a lot of questions to answer and you have a lot of whatever, then you gravitate toward... John Lennon.
That's actually pulled from the 13-year-old's handbook, I think, that everyone gets when they're 13. But please, go ahead.
John Lennon is great, but then part of you wants to go even further, and then that's where Yoko Ono comes in. And it's funny how, you know, there are some people who like all three, the Beatles and Yoko Ono and John Lennon, and there's some people who, you know, they stumble onto Yoko Ono because they love the Beatles, and that's so extreme to them, they can't accept Yoko. They don't pull her into their hearts. And so all he said is that you just got to give it a shot, and that's how he described it. So he gave me a mix, and this is how I've gotten into all the types of music I've gotten into, where he made me a mix of a bunch of songs, like a full 120-minute mix tape back in the day when that was the most you could put on. And it was mostly from her box set, Ono Box. And I listened to it, it's like, okay, you know, a lot of it wasn't, you know, I like certain songs. So I took five songs that I really liked and I made a mix and I sprinkled those throughout the whole song with songs that, like with Eartha Kitt, and it was my first rendition of Europe Is My Playground, which we'll talk about, which is leading up to it. Okay. Anyway, so I was making this mix called Europe Is Our Playground. And it was a mix that I was preparing to make for my friends who were in Europe at the time. I was going to visit them and we were going to make this joke that we were going to go city to city and, quote, Europe was our playground.
Right.
And so Yoko Ono was prominent. And it was my way to introduce my friends to Yoko. And it was my way to get into Yoko myself. Because when you throw in, like, for instance, Eartha Kitt is a great. Everyone loves Eartha Kitt on the first hearing. And there's no one who's going to complain about that. And, you know, sometimes Yoko may be a little harder to get into. But when you nestle things that are, you know, a little sugar, a little spice, you put it together and you enjoy it. And now, what I always like to do is to make, I love making mixtapes and I love all that kind of stuff. And I made two versions of, Europe Is Our Playgrounds. Oh, it's a long story, but anyway, so I'm now making another one, another CD's worth of music. And the whole concept behind that was just to, the whole point was, get some French songs, some Portuguese songs, Spanish songs, but all from singers like, I know singers, Juanita Reina and Sara Montiel, who was in that last Almodóvar movie, they're made references to Sara Montiel, that Bad Education film. Anyway, the whole point was women with extreme voices and points of view. We did a little bit of the, who's that woman who did Ballad of Lucy Jordan?
Oh,
She's Tough Life.
Oh my God, starts with an M.
Marilyn Faithful.
Yeah, Marion Faithful.
Marion. And so it's just I can even later send you a list of all the people in that group, but it's all about that. Anyway, one of the first Yoko Ono songs that I ever got. Well, it was a compilation of her. It was the greatest hits of her box set called "Walking on Thin Ice," and on it, it's got this one song called "Uh Oh," and I remember I played that for somebody who was in San Francisco at the time, and he was kind of being snotty about Yoko. But when that song came on, he's like, "I kind of like this song. It's not bad." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'm good for you. I'm glad you like it."
Biatch.
And. And it is probably the best song to play to somebody who doesn't know Yoko, and it's such an incredibly optimistic song, and since you know how things happen in current world events, it's a really beautiful song, especially when you think of it in terms of the historical context when she wrote it, and because of all the turmoil that comes up and down, it's still always poignant. But it's a very positive song. And so Yoko has a little bit. I mean, she sings sweet songs. She sings songs of loss. She sings songs of extreme, you know, anger and rage and stuff like that. So
I was thinking about her today, as a matter of fact, as I do every day. I was doing one of my infant classes. I teach these infant music classes, and for our bubble song, we do a song where like we blow bubbles and the kids like run and catch them. It was Love Train. I think the OJs did it originally, but it was a remake of it. And I was thinking about that whole sentiment of the song of like join hands and make a love train, and how Yoko Ono has that kind of sensibility.
Oh, I guess. Majorly,
Yoko,
yeah.
But and that I admire about her, because it's difficult to be that positive and not without apology. You know what I mean? Like to tell, like to call people on the phone. Like there, I have a thing when she was on the Mike Douglas show, when they did this little segment where they just called people randomly in the phone book and told them that they loved them. You know what I mean? Just like that to most people's like, oh, she's a kook. But she was really like, I love these people and I'm going to tell them, even if I don't, you know what I mean? So I just appreciate that about her too. I mean, it's really easy to be like pissed off and like nasty and that kind of thing. But for her to have this philosophy of like genuine, just admiration for, you know, being alive or whatever.
I mean,
badass.
I agree. Probably her recurring theme through all her music is a desire for oneness, that all humans are connected. We have all these things that obviously separate us, like race, color, economic status, all these things. But ultimately, you know, it's the desire of oneness, or the the vision of everyone as one is not a possibility.
Like, didn't, when she was here, when you went to that, the talk that she gave or whatever, mm-hmm. was that when she did the string, that she tied the whole string around the audience?
No, she didn't do that. She did this whole teapot thing. She kind of gave a little, she took a teapot and it was these, probably she had it made for this talk, but it was a teapot in different, like, configurations, and she had a talk based on that, but she didn't do a string thing. Maybe you heard about that.
Yeah, maybe that's not even her.
She did a little mini performance.
We should probably get to the music.
Oh, okay. So here we go. The song's called Uh-Oh, and even though she doesn't do any of her, what is she sort of famous for?
Her is caterwauling.
Caterwauling. Still, she does a lot of what, she still uses sounds to kind of create, because that's it's a very Japanese thing, creating poetic sounds with syllables and things. But it's a very straightforward, beautiful song. Awesome.
What album is this off of, or is it? Maybe I'll look it up.
I'll look it up.
We'll look it up, all the songs.
playing,
quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I'm really going to edit it in when I get home, but you don't know that. All right, Uh-Oh by Yoko Ono.
1, 2.
Okay, that was Yoko Ono with Uh-Oh. I'm so glad you chose that song. That is, I hadn't listened to that one for some reason for a long time, and it's totally cute.
Yes, perfect.
Okay, so now to more serious side of Little Robin.
Uh-oh.
I wrote down all these possible things to talk about. One of the things I want to talk about was, I guess, in my relationship with you, mm-hmm. I at once admire your ability and your drive to like get totally connected with your work, and the way that you can produce an incredible amount of work and good work in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But then also, as a friend, it's like, well, what happened? I thought we were hanging out. You know what I mean? So how does that, do you find that struggle to happen within yourself too? I mean, because you and I have talked about that sort of thing to a certain extent and how that kind of affects relationships. And I have that experience too, to a certain extent, with my own friendships.
Most people I know, I sort of prep them, especially someone I just met. I sort of like, kind of give them a little bit of a heads up. It's like, oh yeah, I have this obsessive compulsive streak where I'll just do nothing except this. And you can only do that for so long, and then it just depends on what you want out of life. I mean, sometimes art is your, the enjoyment you get out of creating something is, sometimes you enjoy that more than relationships with people. Mm-hmm. And that sounds maybe bad, but it just depends. And there's different times in your life when certain things are important to you. And there are times when, like, maybe you have no creative drive and you just want to hang out with people and that, yeah, and cling to that. But in terms of dealing with it, being in a relationship helps a lot, because it forces you. If you really, there's a point when, like, you know, I want this relationship to work. I need to make sacrifices. Artists have to change. You know, there's the whole cliche of being a selfish artist, not only is everything is self-centered and everything is about what you want. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of change a way if you want to be accessible to someone, because nobody just wants, you know, they want participation in a relationship. Unless, of course, you just marry another artist who kind of understands you. But so, in my experiences, I've met someone, his name is Ben Johnson, who is incredibly supportive, and that's, you know, every artist needs someone to sort of support him and all that. I have to change, because, you know, he needs all of everything. He needs all the emotional support and needs all the things that anyone would want to feel like you matter, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not just you only matter when you're not working.
Right.
And so one of the things that's really helped me out a lot is the way that Ben helps me. I'm not a big self-promoter. I don't always go out and shake everyone's hand and tell everyone what I do and what I do is the best and I need my work. And Ben's been incredibly helpful. And just going out there and talking to people and just being very, it's easy for someone separate than you to rave about your stuff. Yeah. And that's what everyone needs. Every artist needs to be promoted by someone else. And I used to have a big deal with galleries taking a big profit and I always had a problem with that. I always felt like, but the galleries don't do anything. But in order to sell work, you have to just always be shouting out. Someone has to be shouting out for you.
Yeah.
Whether it's music or everyone needs a promoter. And it's a full-time job, and that person basically is going to get about half of what you make, at least. So, I mean, just deal with it. And that's, nothing is better than being in a relationship where you're basically married with someone who will happily take 0.5%, because they were going to take 0.5% anyway. So
that doesn't feel
they
so bad
might
bad
as well.
You know.
But it is exciting because, I mean, there's only sometimes your brain, I just can't think of every little thing. I can't think of doing every correct business, returning every phone call and being very professional. Mm-hmm. But Ben helps me a lot. And he's just always out there. What I feel like, I do the same thing for him. He's into photography. And sometimes, it's like, we all get self-conscious about our own work. We don't always mm-hmm. want to put our work out. I mean, we do. It's our ultimate fantasy to see it everywhere. But we're afraid to do it. So sometimes it just needs someone who's going to say, this needs to be out there, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to make some phone calls. I'm going to try.
So we've got another song to talk about, and you want to... Sweetie Petite.
You want
to talk about Sweetie Petite or your paintings, or can you do both real fast?
Real quick. let's see. I have these new prints, and what are they named? They're just a series of landscapes, and
I can put links to these in the show notes.
Yeah, if you go to littlerobbie.com, and you go under... residential work. It's I'm about to redistribute everything. But there's a set of Giclée prints that I just did last fall. Giclée, it's a French word for ink. I forgot the word, what it means. But anyway, it's just like a fancy pigment ink printer. And I just said it so bad. But anyway, it's watercolor prints done on the computer. And it just gives you kind of ultra flat, beautiful, saturated colors.
So what's the process of it? Is it? I'm afraid this is a stupid question.
Also,
is it actually painted and then scanned in, or?
No, it's a completely a digital image. It's all vector, which means it's all computer mathematical equations. Okay. And I use a program called Illustrator, and this is like artist to artist. A marketer, like an artist marketer, probably wouldn't say all this stuff. They want to keep it all a big mystery. Mm-hmm. But, it's just, I like, as you can see, it's just a lot of almost spring-loaded images. And it's a lot of those images I use at the Brown Bag Deli and stuff like that.
I love when that happens. If it's okay, I can, like, take these pictures off your website and post them someplace else and link them into the blog. Yeah. Where my podcast will be posted, so it'll be easy to go
right
to them.
Take a couple of them. Okay. Don't do too many because my boyfriend will get pissed. He's very territorial about my work. He doesn't want to get ripped off.
All right,
it's cool, but that's the whole point. When you're just starting out, I have this very laid back thing about like wherever it goes, it goes. I can't be controlling it.
Well, I do have 11 subscribers to this show, so I mean, that's it could go anywhere. I'm just kidding. Okay. Well.
Then Sweetie Petite, it's an animation series. I have a series of, I have created a bunch of characters, and I started off making characters that I started out as sketches, and I gave them color. I mean, they first were black and white line drawings, and then I gave them color, and then I gave them personalities, and then I needed villains, so I made some more villains, and then I made some characters that eventually evolved into, split into two, or made into one, they were joined. And then I gave the characters connections, like they were not necessarily good and bad guys. They were bad guys who were, like, manipulated, so they were not necessarily evil, but they were just manipulated to do bad things, so they were, like, half bad. And then there's good characters, and, I mean, there's a story of, we created a 4-episode storyline where these characters would do their thing, and it would have musical elements, and they'd have songs. Now, this is a huge project. It's sort of like when that screenplay that every young writer holds in his hands is, one day this is going to be the greatest thing. And what we're trying to do is we're going to create a children's book of sort of an edited down, bare bones version of it. And I think that's something that we can handle. Like, we can make the images, print them, and even bind them and make the book before it even has to be, you know, sent off to, you know, be made somewhere else. I mean, because an animation would actually have to be done by staff.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Sweetie Petite is also on the website. You should just
go Sweetie Petite is if you go to littlerobbie.com on the original Little Robbie. Again, Sweetie Petite is about this little brown bunny, baby girl, cutie pie. It's just Sweetie Petite is a nickname we had in college, and we just being silly. Mm-hmm. And she's this little bunny who's got a best friend named Au Contraire Pierre, and he's a pink panda bear. He's a boy panda bear who happens to be pink. And he's temperamental, he's a very sometimes difficult, and his name is Au Contraire because he's kind of disagreeable. He's always, he's the kind of person, a little kind of guy who always is fussy, and he's got a really cute particular personality, and so they're best friends, and their story is about how one of them takes a journey and the other one feels left out, and then they have to sort of come back or not come back. It's dealing with loss and all that, but there's a lot of fun stuff, so don't. And then of course Sweetie Petite has a fairy godmother named Ella Belle, who is this kind of Hindu blue elephant, and you have to see that. And then there's this little group called Baby Cakes, and they are a boy band.
They rock too.
They are delicious, literally. And then also there's Holy Cow, and I have this whole like Eastern religion thing going on, And he's a really cute character. And these are, because I actually have this big, I'm not a big Christian person, I'll be honest about that, but I really love philosophy and religious philosophy and things mm-hmm. like that. So I feel like I want to put in characters that are representational of other, I mean, I'm not cutting, I kind of believe in taking the best of everything, not necessarily taking a single religion and going straight with that. That's yeah. my thing.
I'm with you on that one.
And then there's a couple, so, and then there's the bad guys that I won't even tell you until you have to see them, because they're the most fun.
All right, I'm thinking we're running out of time.
Okay, well then now we're leading.
Shut it.
As we're going to the third song, we'll talk about, we talked about artists with very particular voices.
Oh, yeah.
And another artist who I really like, and again, someone mentioned this to me, and she said, I really like this singer named Buffy St. Marie. And I'm like, okay, so someone had mentioned that to me in the back of my head, and when I was in high school, in college, I rummaged through those vinyl record stores, and I found her greatest hits on a record, a double album. And I bought it, and I had a record player at the time, and I played it out, and I really enjoyed it. And it was just the slightest, you know, thing. I even mentioned it to her, and she's like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. I mean, she wasn't even that big of a fan. She just kind of remembered it from her own childhood. And so Buffy St. Marie, her background is that she's Native American, who was adopted by a white family in Canada, and when in the 60s she became a lot more political, and she sort of like a lot of people do, especially if you're adopted, you have to find your roots, and so she became a protest singer, folk singer, but she has this thing that she does is she writes these songs that sometimes seem like they were written like a folk song has this classic sense that you don't know when it was written, who was written. It's not like trendy. It has no, it's just about a certain time period. It's like a song that was passed on by mouth, not by recordings. So she obviously has all, you know, she did a lot of stuff in the 60s and she did a little bit in the 70s. And I think that she did a re-recording in the late 90s of a lot of her older stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you get her newest greatest hits called Up Where We Belong, because mm-hmm. by the way, she wrote that song that Joe Cocker and that
Jennifer Warnes?
Or whatever.
That's okay.
It's a great song. Everyone loves it, and that's the only song everybody knows. But just for you to all know, Buffy wrote that song. And Buffy would never, probably was not allowed to record it for the movie because her voice is considered, you know, a little maybe what, too vibrato, whatever. Yeah. Screw them. Anyway, so I love Buffy. Yes, you should get into her if you're interested. And but we were also talking, Mike and I were talking about covers and how we love to hear covers of songs we really love. And in her greatest hits, which is what Buffy does, is she kind of revisits and she covers her own songs. And she said about this one song called Until It's Time For You To Go, it's one of her, I think it's her favorites in terms of, she's so proud of the people who've covered it. She writes in the liner notes that it's been covered by Barbara Streisand and Elvis Presley, among other people. And that's, I have to admit, that's a big deal if you think about, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And she's just head over heels about, you know, can you imagine Elvis Presley doing a cover of a song you wrote? You know, it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then there's a singer who I like called Cleo Lane, and she just recently got a cover of her doing a version of Until It's Time For You To Go, and it's her version is probably my favorite cover of this song.
Sweet.
And that's it, I guess. We'll leave you with that.
Yeah, and we can say goodbyes after the song.
Okay, sure. I love making this up as we go. Cleo Lane with her cover of Buffy St. Marie's Until It's Time For You To Go.
Angel, you're a man.
the same. We laughed and played at the start, like in a game. You could have stayed outside my heart, but in you came. And here you'll stay until it's time for you to go. Don't ask how of me. Don't ask why of me. Don't ask forever of me. Love me. I was an oak, now I'm a willow, now I can bend. And though I'll never in my life see you again, still you'll stay until it's time for you to go. Time for you to go. And here you'll stay until it's time for you to go.
Crap, that was a long interview. Sorry, guys. I think it's great. Right now, honestly, it's at 58 minutes, the whole show without this closer. I'm going to edit that down a little bit and hopefully get it down to maybe 45 or so. We'll see what happens. But thanks again, Roberto, for doing the show for me. I hope you guys enjoyed the music. And that's it. Email is mikeypod@gmail.com. You can see me at mikeypodonthebayou.blogspot.com. for updates and show notes. I'll put all the websites we talked about in there. And I think that's it. Thanks for sitting through that. And let me know what you think. Tell me you're listening, if you are. And, well, I guess if you're not, you wouldn't be able to tell me. Whatever. Anyway, have a good week. See you on Tuesday.